Okay. So, part two of Das Torah. So, last week we did Lo Tasar, which is a real sugya. You know, Das Torah, as far as I can tell, is... I don't know if it's a sugya. I don't know what to call it. It's definitely important in our exploration of the issues of balancing... Thank you. Of balancing authority and autonomy in Pesach. As we mentioned last week, one of the questions we have to ask is the extent of the authority of rabbis, which rabbis, v'chadoma. So last week we dealt with Lo Tasar, the question of whether Lo Tasar implies infallibility or tells you that you're obligated to listen even if whoever the rabbis are fallible. We dealt with whether Lo Tasar applies only to the Sanhedrin HaGadol, primarily to the Sanhedrin HaGadol, to the Sanhedrin HaGadol plus the Mishnah and the Gemara because of communal acceptance of sorts. Does it apply to the Gedolim? Does it apply to your local rabbis? V'chadomeh. And then we started dealing with the question of whatever that authority is, does it extend beyond halacha? So last week we touched on the question of machshava. We saw different approaches, whether... there is authority in the realm of Machshava. Obviously, to some extent, I would think there is, but we dealt with two different sources, okay? What I want to deal with today is more what is colloquially called Das Torah. You can look, and again, people should thank Rabbi Manning for letting us use his Makaros so that I didn't have to cut and paste all of these. And you can go to his website. He has a four-part series on authority where all these PDFs are uploaded along with the audios. Okay, so Das Torah is essentially, right, an ideology which teaches that the advice given by great Torah scholars must be followed by Jews committed to Torah observance, inasmuch as these opinions are imbued with Torah insights. Now, in modern parlance, this has become to be the theory that rabbis have authority over a lot more than halacha. Is that fair? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Das Torah is most commonly associated with what austere body?
Haredim.
The Moetzet Gedoyle HaToyche, the rabbinic board that runs the Agudat Yisrael. You know, we will get to a piece by Avi Shafran, but Rabbi Avi Shafran, often in his piece, you know, everybody knows who he is. He's the spokesman of the Agudah. He's a very nice person. Friend of my father's, lives in Staten Island. Very nice, very eloquent. And he's a very eloquent defender of Das Torah, that we have to listen to the great Chacham of the generation, epitomized in the Motzes Gedolei HaToyche. Okay. Before we start, I want to throw this out, and you can look at it yourself. There is an excellent, excellent article by Benny Brown. Benny Brown is a scholar at Hebrew U who basically writes on Haredi issues. He has a long piece on the Chavetz Chaim. He has... He has a book in the Chazon Ish, which is you might have seen in Moshe was selling it for a while. It's two volumes, like 1,000 pages or something like that. It's very, very long. Apparently very good also. He's a very good scholar. So he has a 120-page article on Das Torah, the six stages of Das Torah, and traces historically the development of this notion of Das Torah through the Haredi world down to the last tiny detail, how it looked in the era of Rav Shach, how it looked by the time you got to the era of Rav Eliashiv, how it looks after the era of Rav Eliashiv, etc., etc. So, it is clear that whatever it is that the modern conception of Das Torah is, as it is construed, it has gone through several iterations. If you're interested for some reason, it's a good article, but if you're really interested in the historical development of Das Torah, then... Bahaslacha. It's in Hebrew also, by the way. And this is a long article in Hebrew. I read it. It's nice. He's a very good scholar. Somewhat compelling. Relatively compelling. Okay. Fine. But now let's move to Das Torah, okay? So, before we get into this Makar sheet, look at the second Makar sheet I get at. Right, one more phrase we have to put in the mix before we actually analyze how people treat Das Torah is the term Emunat Chachamim, or Emunas Chachamim. Probably Emunas Chachamim. Right, what is Emunas Chachamim? Where does it come from? people? Where does it come from? I have a curse here with Rabbi Manning's explanations of where things come from. I'm like, making your life easy, really I'm making my life easy, but hey, whatever. But no, it comes from Avos, right? The Bitter Shul is on the Mishnah Avos, right? The Mishnah, the Tosefta, really, the sixth Perek of Avos, which is not a Mishnah. No, you don't have the Mishnah there because it wasn't worth adding another Makar sheet for the Mishnah. The Mishnah there lists the 48 the 48 things you need for Kinyanei HaTorah, right, to be Kohen HaTorah. One of them is Emunas Chachomim. So, in addition to pointing to Lotasar, which we already pointed to next week, as a possible source for this for Das Torah in its more expansive forms, they point to this frame of Emunas Chachamim, that you need to have faith in the Chachamim. So the first thing we should note is that there are actually two ways of understanding the word Emunas Chachamim. Now, someone tell me, grammatically, Emunas Chachamim can mean one of two things. Either Emunah Ba'Chachamim, or Emunah Shel Chachamim, the Emunah of the sages. Meaning, right, so if it's the second, then it actually has nothing to do with our topic, and that is how the Midrash Shmuel takes it. That is how that's the second day in the Midrash Shmuel. That's source 13 over here. We got Mefsher Shemesh and Yana Emuna Bo Yisbrach Shlo Yachan Hazem Zatzmo Sigur Derech Hadaseichel Rak Emuna Tia Kiderech Emunas Chacham She Emunas Uman Mikabelas Ish Mipi Ish Ad Lemoshe Misinai. Right, that you should have the faith of the rabbis, the faith in the Mesorah, without constantly questioning the Mesorah, as Rabbi Lam characterizes it, a wise man's faith, a sophisticated faith, as opposed to a primitive, naive, simplistic faith. Okay, if that's what it means, then it has nothing to do with us. However, other people use Emunas Chachamim to mean not faith, and this is Pashas what it means, not faith of, but faith in. But then the question is, what does it mean? So, the great defender or creator of the notion of Emunas Chachamim and Das Torah, as we know it, is Reb Dessler. We'll see in a moment. So you look, this translates at number 15. The definition of Emunas Chachamim follows from this. One who wishes to believe them may make use of their clarity of vision and perception, so they may be his guide. We may straighten our worldview and our practical behavior through their words. Moreover, it is only to the extent that we become their disciples and exert ourselves to understand their ways of thought that our own thought becomes straight. Therefore, the Gedolim of our generation, whose life occupation was to continue as loyal disciples of the way and thought of our sages, merited this straightness to a tremendous degree, so much so that their opinion, even in matters for which they have no explicit source, and even ordinary advice in worldly matters, is true and clear, as our eyes have seen, thank God, also in this generation. Right, so he takes it, first of all, to mean, and what does Chacham means faith in the sages, and he also means it means faith in the sages in everything. Okay, we'll get back to him. Okay, now, probably the most forceful critique of this notion of what does Chacham comes from the Shvi De'esh, and then was recently developed more expansively by Rev Rabinovich in an article in Chakira in Volume 5.
They named the article Chakira?
No, the journal is called Chakira. It's the journal of philosophy and Gemara and Halacha and all types of things from Flatbush. The place in Brooklyn, not the school. It's the yeshivish part of
Flatbush. My dad went to Flatbush High School.
No, I'm saying it's not Flatbush High School. It's the yeshivish part of Flatbush. That's what I'm clarifying. It is the yeshivish part of Flatbush. That's why their email is, an MSN account, or something. I'm telling you, all these journals, one is MSN, and one of them you have to email the editor's wife at AOL. this is what? It's really quite a problem. Okay. Anyways. What?
That's contemporary.
Yes. I won't say his email on the recording. I don't know if he wants it public. Yeah. Okay, fine. So, the Shvi De'esh, in a beautiful passage, because I love the Shvi De'esh, says as follows. Does anyone remember all 48 of the Kinyanei HaTorah? No. But one of them, in addition to Emunas Chachamim, another one of them is Pilpul HaTalmidim. Yes? So, Sridesh has this brilliant argument. He says, why are both emunas chachamim and pilpul atalmidim necessary for to be kone Torah? So he says, well, it's very simple. Let's say you're reading a fantasy book, okay? And something doesn't make sense. What is your reaction?
Try to figure out why it doesn't make sense.
No, it's just fantasy book.
The fantasy book.
Oh. Okay, imagine.
What?
Move on.
You move on, right? Let's say you're reading... I don't know. You're reading a math book, right? And you don't understand a particular formula. Then what do?
You ask someone.
You try to understand it. Well, let's say you have to pass this test. So what do?
You try to understand
it. So he said, well, you need emunas chachamim. Now, what does emunas chachamim mean? It doesn't mean you believe everything Chazal say or everything rabbis say. What does it mean? That you assume that what they're saying makes sense. Now, if you assume that something makes sense and you don't understand it, then what do you need to do?
Figure it out.
You need to figure it out. The only way to ensure that people develop independently is to say this is a body of wisdom that you have to take seriously. If you take it seriously, even if you don't agree, the fact that you take it seriously and have to engage with it will force you to sharpen your own mind and be able to have your own opinions. If you read all this stuff and don't take it seriously, you're never challenged and you'll never think. Right? So he argues that actually, even if it means faith in the sages, it doesn't mean this blind faith in Mechmeyalu. In fact, it means a critical faith. Right? It means that you trust that what they're saying is not stupid, but it doesn't mean you automatically accept it. It means you engage with it, you try to figure it out. If you have no way of defending it, so then you can have your own opinion. But at least you have to take it seriously. You have to have respect for bearers of the Torah. And with that, you'll be able to meld your own view. So even though he understands emunah b'chachamim, really pushes back very strongly on the blind notion of avdas Torah. The Michlev Melayahu sees emunah chachamim. Rabbi Rinovich, here, there's just two quotes from him. Right, so after quoting the Sridesh and everything he says, we can conclude from all this that Emunas Chachamim is indeed an exalted attribute. I'm going to read an Ashkenazis even when it's written in Sephardi, because honestly, I have never heard anyone talk about Emunas Chachamim and Das Torah in Sephardi. It's never happened. It just doesn't happen. Am I right?
What about the Shas party?
What?
The Shas party.
I think they just say Rabbi Ovadia said it. I don't think they worry about Das Torah. Am I right?
I don't know.
Do they use Das Torah? I don't know. Do they use Das Torah? Do they just say... I think they just say Maran said so. I think. I don't know. I mean, Maran ad Maran lo kam ki Maran and whatever. And... Yes. So we can conclude from all this that Emunas Chachamim is indeed an exalted attribute, but one that is quite difficult to achieve. It is not found in those who are lazy, who wish to relieve themselves of the burden of study. True, Emunas Chachamim obligates one to develop deeper, to find the reasoning behind the Chachamim's words, while at the same time requiring the student or inquirer to be critical and to investigate rigorously in order to verify that there is no room for dissent. Certainly there exists justification for their words. We still need to determine if they are to be actually carried out halacha l'maisa. All this applies to the words of Torah, which all Jews are commanded to know and carry out. On the one hand, one may not rely on his own knowledge to issue rulings even for himself, certainly for others, while consulting and seeking advice from Chachamim. On the other hand, even when one does ask and seek advice, he is not freed from the obligation to personally understand the halacha. So he's not like a blind person following one teacher or another. Obviously, someone who has no knowledge has no choice but to choose a Rav and to follow him, but he still bears the responsibility of learning so that he can understand and validate the teachings of his Rav. So again, Rabinovich, following the Sridesh, thinks that Emunas Chachamim actually proves the opposite of the Nechdem Eliyahu. Not that you blindly follow them in everything, but rather, it just means you need to respect them that forces you to think about it yourself. You have to take what they say seriously, even if you don't accept it. Right? If you yourself are not qualified to paskin, you have to follow somebody. But the notion that what's important to Torah is Emunas Chachamim is not that you follow somebody blindly. It's rather the ideal, which is to treat their words seriously and come up with your own opinion, or agree with them, or disagree with them. Yeah.
Doesn't that contradict the bindingness of halacha?
Well, I mean, as you said, right? If you're a poseg, well, no, right? If you're not a poseg, you need to find a rav. Right? That's what he says very clearly. But if you're a poseg, we're not talking about chazal here, but
If you ask a poseg a question and you think you also know something,
no, so that's what he said. So if you're not a poseg, right, you're not pasking the shaila, so then you have to bind it, but you at least want to understand what he says, right? There's two levels here. One is, right? If you remember from the first week, we talked about there's two, right? We could talk about bringing people into the halakhic process in two ways. One is to talk about it in terms of transparency, right? Even if you think that the layman is not part of the halakhic system, right, you can still say there's a value to transparency if you think they should, right, that it shouldn't be blind following by fiat, right? So he's saying at least that, even if you're not posketing, right? You can say it's binding and still say we don't believe in a blind faith, right? Which is really what the Mechlem Elio is endorsing. I mean, he is. We'll get to him in a moment. But no, if you yourself are qualified to be a posek, we don't even hold that, right? You have the right to make your own decisions, right? You consult with people, right? But you make your own decisions. Obviously, there's a sliding scale, and we'll get back to this. What decisions can you make for yourself? What can't you? V'chole, v'chole, but we'll get back to it, okay? One more piece from Rabinovich. Recently, some have begun applying the term as chacham to something else entirely, something that Chazal never discussed, that chacham also have prophetic authority in divrei rishus. Right, optional activities that are neither prescribed nor proscribed by halacha. We are not talking about asking advice of those who are experienced and wise in Torah, whose righteousness, Torah knowledge, and brilliance provide good guidance and sound advice. It is surely good for any person to seek advice from those who are greater and better than he raised it. It's not that he's opposed to asking people for advice, or telling you to come for advice. That's great. But there's a difference between asking advice and taking responsibility for one's actions and relying on others without fully knowing independent thought. There are those who label such childish behavior as emunas chachamim, while in reality is a distortion of the great attribute. Instead of acquiring true Torah, those who cling to this distorted emunas chachamim distance themselves from the light of Torah and ultimately incapable of distinguishing between right and wrong. Okay, so now let's move to Das Torah proper, right? We've already started to see the discussion here around emunas chachamim, but let's take Das Torah itself. What is the thing called Das Torah, and do we hold of it? Okay, that's basically what we want. So there are several approaches, okay? Let's see how we do this. Okay, you know what? We'll just follow it this way, okay? So first let's start with the Haredi perspective, right? Let's get out there where some of the earlier sources that discuss Das Torah as we know it. This is going to be the, let's say, expansionist Das Torah, okay? Let's start with the Chofetz Chaim, okay? So, hu ha-yomer, mi shedaito Das Torah, yachol liftor kol bayot ha-olam b'chal u'befrat, ela shetanai hisnesha Das Torah tiyetzlula b'li eidu p'niya unetiya kol shehu. So here we have a radical perspective which basically encompasses the modern Haredi perspective in its extreme form, which is, what is Das Torah?
Everything.
Well, let's break it down. Das Torah means that you believe in the Chachamim with regards to everything. But now he says something even more radical. Did you notice what he said? What does it mean for someone to have Das Torah about, let's say, political matters or practical matters, business matters? Right? What would allow that person to have Das Torah, to claim Das Torah? Only if... Come on. Yeah, if he doesn't know about business. The only way that someone has Das Torah about business or political matters is if he's never doesn't know anything about business or politics. Right? This is a very extreme approach. Right? What does this approach say? Das Torah tells you that Chachamim have absolute authority over everything, politics, business, mundane matters, because the Torah grants them understanding into these matters, but since it's the Torah that provides them with understanding, definitionally, they can't have understanding from anywhere else. So anybody who, Rachmana Litzlan, thinks that rabbis should pasken on politics and therefore should understand politics, not Rachmana Litzlan, they shouldn't, right? If their knowledge is mixed in with anything, I don't know if it's quite this extreme, but it's basically what he says, right? It can't be, right? The condition is Shadas Torah Tietzlula Bli Ezo Pnia Onidia Koshi. Vijah Adam Shadas Torah Lo. Elish Murevis Afil Ma'at Indeos Achirs Menashuk. Omen Itanot. Right? If you have somebody who is a Talmud Chacham, but he has a little bit of mixed in because he read the newspaper Rachmana Litzlan, right? Or he's influenced by the newspaper at least, Right? Hareya dastara achura. It's not pure dastara. That's it. Right? So the very extreme presentation of this is not only that Chachamim are binding in non-halachic matters, but they're dafka binding in non-halachic matters when they don't know about the matters that they are talking about. Right? This is the very extreme expression of this position.
Doesn't the question itself have to give them information?
Yes, but you know, you can get around things like that. Look, the Chassam Sofer, we saw this last year, Chassam Sofer claims that even the learning, the basic science that you need to answer a scientific shayla, when you learn the science is considered bittul Torah. It's just bittul Torah, which happens to be necessary, right? You can say, okay, they need the bare bones, but they can't even be mitachis to it, right? They just need enough to answer the question, but if they start getting involved, right? Meaning, at least his image, I assume he thinks you at least have to know about what you're talking about, but the notion that if someone's going to be a political leader, he needs to, you know, read the newspapers like on a regular basis to know what's going on in the world, right? That he's against. I assume you need to know the shayla. I assume.
Assuming an argument for the binding nature of their device, or just it's perfect advice, you should follow it, because they're all including everything.
He hasn't said yet, right? You should follow it. This passage doesn't say whether it's binding or not. You should follow it because it's good. But you're right, he doesn't say whether it's binding or not, okay? Rav Chanan Wasserman, also a very big proponent of it, said, Avshin, Misha Zachla, Sichel Yashar, Harej Gvul, Lissichlo, Enoshi. Even smart people, there's a limit to how smart they could be. Lachain, Alha Miyaitz Lachil Das Torah, Shehi In Sofit, Umikonan, Vilivo. Shalkol Ben Torah, Da Adam, Donashim, Apshutim, Mu'ureve, Bechol Minei Ashbaot, Vidyot, Minashuk, Vechayotzebo. Right, normal people, their positions are influenced by outside views. Rachmana Litzlan. Ukechol Shatarobes, Meruba, Yosarkak, Poches, Vekatan, Ma'oches, Sheldastoret, Sufam. And the more you know about outside things, the more that's mixed in, the less pure your Das Torah is. Lefichach, rak mishamichal bikiro Das Torah nikia v'meya v'mara achuzim lelo shemet shel taroves midei acheres kolshi. Only someone who is 100% Torah with nothing else mixed in. Yachal yo eitz bar samcha b'nosaf l'kot n'minus grema dain yisrach b'koch ilay gadol mikulam v'hu la'asuk ishmaitzel b'dehocha b'derach ha'teva ein efsharut j'adam yichavein me'atma l'Das Torah amidid l'kach. And he says, and even with all of this, you can't get to the truth without siyat d'shmaya. And so why is it that Chachamim, with pure Das Torah, with pure Torah thoughts, why is their position binding, or at least something we should listen to? Because
they're close to God.
Yeah, because God himself told them, endorsed what they said. Okay? Now, like I said, Rav Dessler is perhaps the most famous and the most forceful early proponent of Das Torah. Look on the next page, okay? I've had the privilege of knowing many of these Torah greats personally, such as the Chofetz Chaim, Reb Chaim Brisker, and Reb Chaim Ozer, and I have seen them at the conferences concerning Jewry at large. I can honestly say that even viewed by such puny intelligence as ours, their perceptiveness was astounding. Their analytic insights would literally descend to the depths of the problems. When they answered with total self-involvement the problems of Jewry purely for the sake of heaven, it was awe-inspiring to see on their faces the degree and the depth of their sense of responsibility. Indeed, whoever did not see this can never know what a true sense of responsibility is. Whoever had the privilege of standing before them at these moments felt with surety that he was witnessing the Shekhinah resting on their activities and the Divine Spirit standing amidst their company. One might literally recite the blessing who distinguishes between the holy and the profane, Amadim and Kodesh Lachol, over the difference between their concerns and other conferences to which we are accustomed. Rol Chanan Wasserman, whose opinion, right, this is being disputed, was a true Gadol. One should not make light of his opinion, still as belittle them, not even because of what pygmies like us consider facts. The sages said that we must obey the Beis Din, even when they say that left is right and right is left. Right. So now you see, right? Where does he think all of this comes from? From Otasur. One should not even say, perish the thought that the Dayanim erred, because I, the puny one, see clearly that they have erred. Rather, one's own perception must be nullified before the brilliance of their intelligence and their siyata d'shmaya. The sages have said, one Sanhedrin cannot nullify a ruling by an earlier Sanhedrin unless it is greater in wisdom and number. Besides, it is probable that what we perceive to be fact is nothing but fantasy. This is the Torah view An emunus chachamim, right? This is the das Torah, an emunus chachamim. The absence of self-negation towards our rabbis is the root of all sin and the beginning of all destruction, while all merits are as naught compared with the root of all faith in the sages. Ha! Okay. So, right now we have a very extreme view. Right? View number one is Chachamim are absolutely binding on everything. That power comes from Lotasar, right? So if you notice now, right? If you remember last week, right? What were the two big questions we asked about Lotasar?
Where does it affect?
Right? For the what types of questions? The answer is, for him?
Everything.
Everything. Next question, is it binding because it's binding or binding because it's?
Correct.
Correct. And he says?
It's binding because.
Binding because correct. So, Lotasar, he takes the most radical position you could take. And the third question, who does it apply to?
Chachamim.
Yeah. Modern day Chachamim. Which he hasn't defined who, but presumably, well, it's a delay of Torah-esque people. Yes? Good. Okay. One more. Chazanish. Right? The viewpoint that divides the Torah into two, question of Isra V'Hetzer on the one hand, and guidance in everyday life on the other, and holds that for Isra V'Hetzer, one should subjugate oneself to the sages of one's time while leaving other matters to one's own free choice. This is the viewpoint held by the heretics of old in Germany, who drove their brethren to assimilate with the other nations. For one to distinguish between instruction regarding Isra V'Hetzer and matters of legislation constitutes denigration of Talmidei Chachamim and places one in the category of those who have no place in the world to come. Okay. Boy. Okay. Wonderful. So far, we have the very, very extreme view, yes? Okay, let's skip for a moment recent additions here. Let's skip to source 12, okay? There was a very wonderful article by Professor Lawrence Kaplan, very controversial because it was extremely biting, extremely harsh, in the Orthodox Forum on rabbinic authority. It's the first article there. You cannot take it to the library at the moment because it currently is sitting on my couch at home. But when I return it, you're free to take it out of the library. It is unscribed. If you have a unscribed, scribed.
I thought it was scribed.
What?
I thought it was scribed.
Scribed.
I don't know.
There's.
Is it on Y-Torah?
Is it on thetorah.com?
It could be that on Y-Torah linked to script. I know that's where I go. That's where, whatever. It's around. You can find it, okay? An extremely biting view of Das Torah. Extremely, 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 okay? So let's look at Source 12. He notes, he says, where does the modern view of Das Torah come from? So he gives different theories, right? Perhaps it comes from Chassidus, right? Whatever. He doesn't like it. So he says like this. Well, Pierre Carus, Bacon, and Ross focus on different ideological processes and movements in their accounts of the development of the Das Torah, right? Again, we will get into the history of where it came from. Their accounts are more complementary than contradictory, inasmuch as they share one critical element in common. For in all three accounts, the notion of Das Torah arises as a response to the various challenges the modern world poses to the authority of the rabbinic tradition. In Pierre Carus' view, the concept of Das Torah is put forward as part of the Hasidic attempt to affirm the essential heteronomy of the halachic tradition in light of the dangers that the modern emphasis on autonomy poses to the binding authority of rabbinic law. In Bacon's account, the concept of Das Torah emerges as part of the attempt to bolster the political and communal authority of the spokesman of the rabbinic tradition in light of the ideological and political challenges posed to these spokesmen by secular Jewish movements and parties. Finally, in Ross's account, Das Torah serves as a key element in developing an approach to the study of Torah that would guarantee the validity of traditional rabbinic interpretation of the law in light of the skeptical challenge posed by the hermeneutic revolution. Precisely, these manifold changes to the authority of the rabbinic tradition then led many of the defenders and exponents of that tradition to make extreme and far-reaching theoretical claims on behalf, and even more important, on their own behalf, as the authorized representatives of that tradition in sociological terms, status anxiety increases the assertiveness of status claims. And in the rest of the article, he goes on to say that this might be the case, but how much basis does he think there is in halacha for Das Torah?
None.
Perfect. None. That's very, very good predicting there. You should know who Lawrence Kaplan is. Lawrence Kaplan is what? There you go, you translate the Lachik Man. Very good. Okay. So that's like the opposite extreme, right? If you read the rest of the article, you'll see that, right, he thinks that this is, that modern Das Torah is basically, you know, a fluke of these historical processes, an attempt to respond to secularization of the community, but bikaron, it doesn't exist. Right? So, min ha-katzeh, el ha-katzeh, and we already saw that, right, we already saw Rabbi Rabinovich also opposes it pretty strongly. This is an 11. We saw parts of it before. Right? Recently, some have been applying again the term Amonis Chachamim to something else entirely. Something that Chazal never discussed. Chachamim also a prophetic authority in Divrei Rishus. We're not talking. Okay, we saw this. Just look at the next paragraph. The distinction between a prophet and a chacham is clear enough. When a prophet instructs in Divrei Rishus, not only recommended to obey, but is forbidden to have any thoughts of doubt or to compliment the possibility the prophecy never took place, and is forbidden to challenge him excessively. With a chacham, however, emunas chachamim requires us to clarify and elucidate his every word, and when it does not do so, is simply a fool who believes anything. If this is true for Torah, and even more so for Divrei Rishus, he who trusts in his own heart is a fool, but one who acts with wisdom will prevail. Okay, and basically, this notion that Das Torah means there is any binding power to non-halachic, non-hashkafeg. I'll leave hashkaf for a moment, right? But in political, mundane matters, he rejects kim'ad entirely. Now, by the way, I didn't put this on the sources here, but does anyone know who the first person to really, really fight the modern notion of Das Torah was? The notion that rabbis have power over mundane matters?
Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. Next source.
No. It's not. I said I didn't put it here. It is. Want to take a guess? He's not someone you would guess.
Moshe.
The Baal HaTanya. Yes, the Baal HaTanya. You heard me correctly. The Baal HaTanya. This is right. I hope I printed this out for myself. At least. At some point I had to stop on how much I printed out for you. Let me see if I can find it. Yes. So the Baal HaTanya in the Igeres, one of the Igeres HaKodesh. Let's see if I have that. Das Teure. Mm-hmm. Yes, okay. I've got a dramatic read of this one. Zichru Yimot Olam. Binu Shnot Dor Vador. Right, remember the days of old. Understand the years of the generations. Haisa. Kazos mimos. Oh, I have to read this in Ashkenaz. What is this? Haisa kazos mimos olam. Did anyone ever see this? Vayei eifo mitzase minhag zeh be'echad mikol sifrei chachma Yisrael. Where did you ever find this custom amongst the chachamim harishonim achronim lios minhag vasikin lishol be'itza gashmias kedaz malaz minyani ha'olam ha'gashmi that you should ask in mundane material matters? Af ligdole chachme Yisrael harishonim kitanoim v'amoroim even the tanoim v'amoroim asher koraz lo anaslu. Right, that nothing escaped them and hearin lu shvilin derakia and they knew the pathways of heaven. Kiyim l'neviim mamish. Only prophets asher yulvneim be Yisrael kishmuel hasher roa haroa shahalach ilav sholid rosh Hashem al dvar haasanos shenavdu la'aviv ki be'emes kol nyanei adam levad midirei Torah v'yerushamayim einam musagim rak b'nevuah. Because anything besides for Torah and Yerushamayim is not grasped by, only grasped by prophets, not chachamim. Gemayim Razal. Hakol b'dei shamayim chutz miyir shamayim v'shiva dvar mechutz etc. Ein adam yodeh ma meviskase meviskat mis takir rather umalu beizavim masay tachzor etc. And then he goes right. So someone asked the Baal HaTanya for das teche advice, and he said,
"I don't give it.
No. The hayu dvar meolam doesn't exist." Okay. So now we have basically the two extremes here, right? We have the very expansionist view of Rav Dessler, which is, first of all, mundane matters and political matters are covered by Tell me the Chacham under Lotasur, under the most expansive version of Lotasur, which is the reason you listen to them, is because they're infallible, right? That they have a special Ruach Kodesh, and all the way to the other hand, you have, you know, some version of, you know, Lawrence Kaplan, Rebbe Rabinovich, the Balatanya, who say, Lo hayu dvarim me'olam. It never happened. Right? Yerushalayim, Torah, fine. Politics, mundane things, bichlal, shalom. Okay? Definitely no London. Okay. Good. Fine. So now there was a lot of pushback on Lawrence Kaplan's article. So we'll look at a few more responses and we're gonna come out with some positions in the middle, okay? So let's just look at some modern things. Right in here, right? This is why I needed someone else in Makar sheet. Like the Iker Makaros are all modern stuff, and like you see, it's like in the Jewish Observer and like Art Scroll. You know, copying and pasting is just not something I really was dying to do. So let's look here at a few more positions, okay? These are some modern people. Dastar, this is from Rabbi Bernard Weinberger on the role of Gedolim. Dastar involves a lot more than Torah Weltanschauung. What?
What source number?
A55, page 3. Dastar involves a lot more than Torah Weltanschauung. Weltanschauung being? Thank you. Worldview in German, or a Torah saturated perspective. Who uses Weltanschauung all the time?
Soloveitchik.
And? There you go. The Rav and Rilchensin, very good. It assumes a special endowment or capacity to penetrate objective reality, recognizing that facts as they really are and apply the pertinent halakhic principles to the form of Ruach HaKodesh, as it were, which borders, if only remotely, on the periphery of prophecy. Right? Just in case you thought that you couldn't quite get farther than Rav Dessler, we have now done it, right? It is not as Ruach HaKodesh. The reason it's infallible is because it's Nivuah, as opposed to, again, the Baal HaTanya who said that what? The difference between Chacham and Nivuah is whether they can rule on mundane matters. Yudel Yisrael inherently ought to be the final and sole arbiters of all aspects of Jewish communal policy and questions of Ashkafa. And even knowledgeable rabbis who may differ with Gedolim on a particular issue must submit to the superior wisdom of the Gedolim and demonstrate Emunas Chachamim. There's a widespread tendency in American Orthodox organizational life, for instance, to acknowledge only our Gedolim who can then be used for the respective purposes of the particular group, but in truth, it is only the intuitive, collective conscience of the Talmidei Chachamim and Yireim of the age upon whose judgment reliance can be placed in the matter. Moshe Scherer, next source, who was the...
There is no collective conscience.
No, we'll get back to this at the end. Right, great. Rav Moshe Scherer, who was a very important person. He was the president of the Aguda and a very, very, very public spokesman of the Aguda. Source 6, Torah observance on all questions of policy to the Dastar of Gedolei Yisrael. Here he really is talking about Motzitz Gedolei Torah. There's no other way of going about this one. Right? He is in fact speaking on behalf of the Aguda. Is the basic foundation block of Agudas Yisrael as an ideological movement. Gedolei Yisrael possessed the best credentials for effectively addressing the world's problems. Does one have faith and recognize the authority and dependability of the Gedolei Yisrael who issued the Pesach Din or not? If one lacks faith in their competence and sincerity, then all the halachic sources in the world are meaningless. Instead of opening a debate between Lilliputians and... Lilliputians, anyone have pronounced that? From Gulliver's Travels.
Yeah.
Putians, good. And giants on halachic issues, the issue must be faced squarely. Does anyone have the right to accept... the right to refuse to accept a Pesach Din in which all the Gedolei Yisrael in the world concurred? And now his son... So let it be said very clearly, total subjugation to Torah, total subservience to Das Torah is not a democratic right, it is divinely ordained. Rav Shimon Scherer really doesn't like us. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Who's awesome?
The modern Orthodox. No, modern Orthodox. In the Aguda Convention, I think this might be the convention, in his speech, where he...
Says a speech to the convention, so...
Yeah. This might have been the speech that I saw, where he said that the fight of the last generation was conservatism and reformism, and now we fight the new ism of modern orthodoxy.
That's nice.
And then said that the biggest threat was the internet, to which the next speaker read his speech off his smartphone. This is a very intense Aguda convention.
That's a major
anyways, okay. Now, for a little bit of more matun positions on Das Torah, okay? Rabbi Wein, who is, I'd say, a middle figure. I think he identifies with the yeshivish world, but tends to be much more...
Is he from YU? Or?
Rabbi Wein lives in Eretz Yisrael now. He had a yeshiva in Muncie for many years. He lives in the yeshivish world, but he is willing to critique them. He, you know, he's into history. He's a middle figure in many ways, okay? So here now he's critiquing Professor Kaplan, right? So right, he basically says that, you know, Professor Kaplan thinks that what Das Torah is this expansive view that we've seen, that you have to listen to Chacham on everything because they're always right. And then Professor Kaplan critiqued that. So he said, what is Halach of not questioning? Whatever Das Torah is, it is not blinding sentence without attempting to understand, interpret, and reason. But after we have exhausted all of our reasons of understanding and reason, when we reach the area of faith and obedience, then Das Torah, like mitzvahs and halacha, prevails. There are those who have the ability to be unquestioning, so great is their trust in their mentor. There are those who question, study the matter, and only then accept. But in the end, the ethic of submission pertains to all. Submission as... Das Torah in no way prevents creativity and self-expression from developing. Instead, it gives it a standard and guide by which it may be nurtured for the benefit of Torah and Yisrael. We have no perfect people, no infallible leaders. Das Torah is the best reasoned opinion of the sage on a particular issue. Since for his followers, or for those who consult him, or for the general Jewish public who defer to him, this is the best opinion available, it should be followed. Whether the opinion was right is beyond human judgment. For knowing what is right is to read God's mind, a talent that none of us has. Right, so now we have a middle view, which is, you should listen to Das Torah, right, on non-halachic matters, but not because they're infallible, but because it's the best. And if you remember, we saw this was the position of some of the Rishonim with Lotasur. It's not that they're infallible, but they're the best we have. So now he's saying, look, the same is true of Das Torah in non-halachic matters. Okay? Similarly, if you look at the next verse, again, now, Rabbi Shafran, Das Torah is not some Jewish equivalent to the Catholic doctrine of papal infallibility. Not only can rabbis make mistakes of judgment, there's an entire tractate of the Talmud, Urios, predicating the assumption that they can, and even the Sanhedrin is capable of erring even on halachic matters. What Das Torah means, simply put, is that that those most imbued with Torah knowledge and who have internalized a large degree of the perfection of values and refinement of character that the Torah idealizes are thereby rendered particularly, indeed extraordinarily, qualified to offer an authentic Jewish perspective of matters of import to Jews, just as expert doctors are those most qualified, though still fallible, to be sure, to offer medical advice. What compels the content of Das Torah is nothing less belief in the transcendence of Torah. In Jewish theology, Torah encompasses every corner of life. It is not limited to matters of Jewish law and practice. It extends to how one is to view happenings and face challenges in one's community, in one's country, on one's planet. The phrase Das Torah may be a relatively new one, but the insinuation the concept it reflects is some sort of modern invention by unmodern Jews is absurd. Emunas Chachamim, or trust in the judgment of the Torah wise, has been part and parcel of Jewish tradition for millennia. The Talmud and Jewish history are replete with examples of how the Jewish community looked to their religious leaders for guidance about social, political, and personal decisions, decisions that, as believing Jews, they understood must be based on authentic Torah values. So again, Rabbi Shafran argues that, yes, Das Torah extends beyond pure halachic matters because, right, and both him and Rabbi Wein gave a justification, though he gave in more. Why does it extend beyond halachic matters? Not because they're Nevi'im, but because... Yeah, because most questions are affected in some way by Torah, by Hashkafa, by something. Okay? And therefore it's binding. But it's not that they're infallible. It's just that it's the best we have. Yes?
This passage doesn't seem to be so widespread. Like, his comparison to, like, Chacham with Das Torah is doctors with Das Torah. So it doesn't extend to everything. It seems, in the first time, it only really, like, Hashkafic issues.
So here's an irony, yes. So one of the ironies is that by Das Torah, I've avoided this so far. Classically, Lotasser dealt primarily with what types of issues? Halachic issues. And then there was a Shaila, does it deal with Hashkafic issues? Das Torah, when you refer to it, what does it refer to?
Non-halachic
matters. In fact, and this is an irony in the Haredi world, where do you see them allowing multiple opinions? By halacha, right? They're okay with Shlomo Zalman saying this and Rav Moshe saying that and whatever. Where do you see them often not allowing multiple opinions?
Das Torah.
Das Torah, right? And if you think about the machlokas that they had after Rav Yashar passed away, right, and the fights that are currently going on between Rav Shtaiman's Talmidim and Rav Shmuel Orbach's Talmidim is because, right, on the non-halachic issues, they disagree very vehemently. On the political issues, they disagree vehemently. And the question was, who is the gadol? And you see the violence that comes from the fact that in those issues, they're not willing to accept a plurality. So yes, there is that, you know, it's not just that these are, it's not that it's everything, but what it is, it's not halacha, right? It's the opposite of what Lo Tusser classically applied to, okay? So now, that's a middle Haredi position, okay? Now, for a middle modern Orthodox position, right, who doesn't fully accept Das Torah, but does sort of accept some notion of Das Torah. And this is from?
The Rav.
Moreno, well, we'll get to the Rav. Before we get to the Rav, Moreno HaRav HaGoyin, Rav Lichtenstein, Shlita, in an article that we've already seen, legitimization of modernity. Do you remember this article? Why did we see it?
Because he talked about how there's no binding effect because there's no question.
We did see it there. What else did we see there? That the only thing that justifies the modern Orthodox world is the Rav, that we have a Gadol to rely on. So in that context, right, he says, this brings us to the familiar shibboleth of Das Torah.
Where are we today?
Page 5. From Lichtenstein, okay? This brings us to the familiar shibboleth of Das Torah.
What is a shibboleth?
Keyword. No, it's shibboleth. Oh no, do you get killed if you say it that way?
It's shibboleth. Because I always use this word. Okay, this guy. This concept is generally in disrepute among varieties of modern orthodoxy who have sought to challenge both its historical progeny and its philosophical validity. I must confess that I find myself in principle more favorably disposed towards the idea. I readily concede that the concept in its most overarching permutations is of relatively recent vintage. Furthermore, I freely concede that at times acknowledged leaders of the Torah world issue pronouncements which anyone with even a trace of modern sensibility finds it difficult to fathom, let alone accept. And then he quotes something from Shach, and I've heard him say it about Rav Ovadia. Nevertheless, beyond reservations, I find the alternate view that Gedolei Torah are professional experts whose authority and wisdom can ordinarily be regarded as confined to the area of their technical proficiency simply inconceivable. Our abiding historical faith in the efficacy of Torah as a pervasive, ennobling, informing, and enriching force dictates adoption of the concept of Das Torah in some form or measure. Still, contrary to the historical course of the idea, I find it less applicable today than heretofore. As a time when many Gedolim do not spring organically from the dominant Jewish community to whose apex they rise, but rather distance themselves from it, when the ability to understand and communicate in a shared culture or even verbal language is by design limited, the capacity of the Gadol to intuit the socio-historical dynamics of his ambient setting is almost inevitably affected. So, Rav Lichtenstein, Moreno Verabeno, says that he accepts a limited view of Das Torah for the same reason, basically, that Rabbi Shaffron did, which is everything is influenced by Torah. It doesn't make sense that things that are not technically halacha hashkafa are bichlal, not affected by Torah. So obviously you're going to turn to Gedolei Torah. But did you notice the big difference between his version of Das Torah and let's say the Chavetz Chaim's?
It's not binding.
You have to be involved.
Yes. Is that he thinks, he doesn't think it's magic, right? If you think about, right, much of the Haredi perspective, it's magical, right? It's Nivua-esque. And therefore, who has Das Torah? Dafka, the people who?
Involved in the community.
Are not involved, the Haredi perspective.
Oh, sorry.
Rav Lichtenstein thinks that to the extent that we accept Das Torah, the notion that people who are influenced by Torah have something to say about the world, why does he believe that? Because Torah gives you a perspective to
understand.
To figure out how a Torah should apply to
here.
Reality. Therefore, for him, it's the opposite. It's Dafka, the Gedolim, who are involved in the world that have Das Torah. So now, if you think for a moment, and we'll get to the Rav soon, right? People always talk about Rav Chaim Ozer having Das Torah, right? Rav Dessler, that was one of his examples. Why, according to Rav Lichtenstein, does Rav Chaim Ozer obviously have Das Torah? Because Rav Chaim Ozer was what, primarily? In addition to being a Talmud Chacham, he was the leader. He was a leader. He wasn't cloistered. He was the leader of the generation. He knew what was going on. That type of person, it makes sense. The reason that the Rav thinks that, the Rav Aaron thinks that the Rav has so much authority was because he was Bashetach and he was a Talmud Chacham. Right? He was, as we already saw his, what he said about the Rav before, right? Even the Israelis don't realize that. He, the poetry, I can't even. Do you remember? Yeah. Okay. He was a towering something over there, whatever it was. Okay. The next piece is from Professor Chaim Soloveitchik in Rupture Reconstruction. Do you want to read through it quickly? Should we read through it quickly? Sure, whatever. In Eastern Europe of the last century, the Rosh Yeshiva was the equivalent of the head of an advanced institute, a single respected without significant communal influence. He was appointed because of his mastery of the book, and to the book and school he was then confined. This mastery now bestows upon him the mantle of leadership, and that mantle has become immeasurably enlarged as the void decreased by the loss of the way of life. The Arachaim, the shrinkage of a culture, manifests itself. Social and political issues, first rank, are now regularly determined by the decision of Torah sages. Admittedly, this need for direction in imprimatur is partly the product of the melding of Hasidic and Misnag, the way of life, as the two joined forces against modernity. The Hasidim have adopted the mode of Talmudic study and some of the ideology of Misnagdim. In turn, the Misnagdim have adopted some of the dress of the Hasidim and something of the authority figure provides guidance in the tangled problems of life. This blending of religious styles is to be sure part of the story, but the crisis of confidence in religious circles is no less a part. This new deference is surprising, as political issues generally lie beyond the realm of law, certainly of Jewish law, which is almost exclusively private law. When political issues do fall within its sphere, many of the determinative elements, attainability of goals, competing priorities, trade-off costs, are not easily reducible to legal categories. Yet the political sphere has now come, and dramatically so, within the religious orbit. Political reactions are not innate. Opinions on public issues are formed by values and ways of looking at things. In other words, they are cultural, feeling up or F, however, of its traditional culture, intuiting something akin to assimilation in a deep and is not obvious way. The acculturated religious community has lost confidence in its own reflexes and reactions, sensing some shift in the operative values. The enclave is no longer sure that its intuitions and judgments are what has aptly turned Torah true. It turns then to the only source for authenticity, the masters of the book, and relies on their instincts and their assessments for guidance. Revealingly, it calls the assessment of Das Torah, the Torah view, or the Torah opinion. Okay, fine. Okay, so to summarize what we have, and then we are going to move to the Rav, because the Rav, there are stichas minei ubei, or kaniram. So, someone tell me the range that we have, right? We started last week with Das Torah, yes? With Lo Tasa, rather, right? So, there are two basically halachic views in question, right? Is what we call modern Das Torah under Lo Tasa, or is it binding under that? Is it binding under Emunas Chachamim? So we have the range. At one end of the spectrum, we have the people who think that Das Torah is fully binding under Lo Tasa. It applies to Torah, to Hashkafa, to politics, to mundane matters. Right? This is like Rav Dessler. And why? Because of infallibility. Right? So all the way at one extreme. Right, if we're going back to what we saw at Lo Tasa, they think Lo Tasa applies to modern rabbis about non-halachic issues because they're infallible. Yes? That's extreme. We agree? Extreme view number one. All the way to the other extreme, we have like Professor Kaplan's view, which is Das Torah does not exist. Rabbis are binding in halachic areas. Maybe Hashkafa, Vikimat, Zehu. Yes?
Yeah.
Okay. In the middle, we have views who think, well, fundamentally, the modern view of Das Torah is right. That even in political issues, we have to turn to the Gedolim. Maybe it is or maybe it isn't from Lo Tasa, but it doesn't imply infallibility. It's just because it's the best that we have. Now, you can say that it's binding on Lo Tasa, or you can say it's the best we have, and therefore you do it because
it's the best we have.
It's the best we have. Right, if you remember last week, when we saw the, even by Lo Tasa itself, the Ramban, right, the way Rav Chanan understood the Ramban is, right, why do we listen to rabbis? Because They intuit God's will, right? It's right, right? It's not even like a formal binding thing. It's just right. So you see that coming alive again in Das Torah, right? Now, on the Haredi perspective, right, Dafka, Das Torah often is a quasi-nevuah Ruach HaKodesh, and therefore you get some people, like the Chafetz Chaim and Ruach Hanan, who say that in order for something to be qualified as Das Torah, Dafka needs
no knowledge.
No, right, separation from the world, right? Now, you have a middle view by people like Luchtenstein, which is, no, there is a role for Das Torah, because, yeah, the Torah has something to say about everything in life. It's not binding in the same way that like Lotosar is, it's not that, but still, to say that our lives, the mundane parts of our lives, do not have religious meaning, especially things as important as politics, v'chadomeh, is not true. So you do need Torah guidance, but, right, dafka from people who are nimsa b'shetach. Now again, other things we can deal with is, right, Rav Lichtenstein is also probably going to tell you that it's not binding, right? Even right, Shaffron and right, Wein go in the direction that it's quasi-binding. Rav Aaron might not say it's binding, right? He might say that you need to inform your opinions by Torah. I'll give you an example in politics, right? Rav Lichtenstein will probably not tell you who to vote for in any given election, okay? He's not in favor of that. But he will tell you...
who he is.
No, he won't tell you who he is. He will tell you what factors you should be weighing when you decide. Right? For example, Wilkinson won't tell you to vote Democrat or Republican, but he will tell you that you should take social factors into account and not only vote based on foreign policies, because the Torah clearly cares about social policies as well. Now, you're free to then think that the best way of taking care of the poor is having, you know, social welfare programs, social democratic programs, or you're free to think that the best way of taking care of the poor is having a laissez-faire economy and then relying on that to make people more wealthy overall and rely on people to give more tzedakah. Right? Both of those are legitimate. There's evidence in both directions. Right? You know, Republicans who tend to be laissez-faire tend to also give more charity, right? So that, right, there's evidence on that side. Obviously, social welfare, if one wanted to, could point to the fact that social welfare does, in fact, help people, b'shetach, right? You can then argue, is it worth the downside in the economy? Does it have a downside in the economy? V'chadoma. But that's a different story. But the fact that you, that, but Rav Lichtenstein will tell you that when you're making that decision, you shouldn't just say, oh, you know, X party at this point is better for the Jews, right, is better for Israel, you should at least acknowledge the fact that part of your responsibility is so, right? So that would be like a middle position, right? Where Torah has to influence it. It's not that the posek is machria. You have to vote for this person. But he gives you guidance on how you're supposed to think about things, because Torah does affect every part of our lives. Okay? So we have the basic range here? Yeah? Okay. So now, as Ezra Manning presented, and I think he basically has his finger correctly on this, right? The Rav was too important for people to ignore, and therefore everyone has tried to claim the Rav for themselves on Das Torah, right?
Is there anything else that everyone has to claim the Rav agrees with?
Everything. But here, the Haredim try to claim the Rav for their own, right? That is unique, based on this very striking eulogy from Chaim Ozer. So when Reb Chaim Ozer passed away, the Rav gave a eulogy in which he presented two types of leadership. The leadership of, well, let's read it, okay? It's the leadership of the Kohen, right?
This is 15.
15, there you go. It's the leadership of the Kohen based on the Urim V'Tumim. And, well, let's read it. The very same priest whose mind was suffused with the holiness of the Torah of Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Eliezer, of Abaye and Rava, of the Rambam and Ravid, of the Beis Yosef and the Ramah, could also discern with the Holy Spirit, Roe Baruch Kodesh HaKodesh, the solution to all current political questions, to all worldly matters, to all ongoing current demands. In recent times, a new approach has written in the Jewish people, which distinguishes between the Torah genius of the generation and the leaders of the generation. This approach states that Torah sages are not fitting to carry the Choshen Mishpat, which carries on all the complexities of the daily life of Klal Yisrael. These Gedolim cannot be relied upon to direct the people in ever-changing political situations. Those who rule in Halacha and Agunot and Esher Beheter cannot be relied upon to rule in Halacha on matters pertaining to the relationship of the Jews to the Jewish world. There's more to this piece. Right? But here he criticizes the people, right? He says there's two types of leaders, right? The leader of the, right? There's two types of leadership, right? Who both was the political leader and wore the Choshen Mishpat and wore, right, the Urim V'Tumim, right? He was both the spiritual leader and the political leader. And critique those who said that this was not the case, right? And said that Reb Chaim Ozer was this embodiment of the person who was the posek and was the political leader. So the Haredi world picks up on this, that you see the Rav thought in believed in Das Torah. Now the problem is, in fact, right? It seems like he does to an extent, but which version of Das Torah? Rilchonsins, right? Meaning Reb Chaim Ozer specifically was a leader who happened to be a Talmud Chacham, and right, therefore knew the Metzius Bashetach, right? If you remember when Shechter was here, right, he talked about why was Reb Chaim Ozer such a great leader, because he was just a genius in politics. The Rav, why was he such a great leader? He just understood politics as well as he understood Tosfos. okay. Now, here, if you skip down to like 17... right, this is right, Wurzburger's characterization of the Rav, though. Right, even more important is the Rav's general approach to the nature of rabbinic authority, which in his view was limited to the domain of psak halacha. He respected the right of individuals to form their own opinions and attitudes with respect to matters which were never subject to halachic legislation. Because of his respect for human autonomy and individuality, he never wanted to impose his particular attitudes upon others or even offer his personal opinions on as does Torah. On the contrary, when I turned to him for guidance on policy matters, which at times also involved halachic considerations, he frequently replied that I should rely upon my own judgment. Similarly, whenever the Rav expounded on his philosophy of halacha, he stressed that these were merely his personal opinions, which he was prepared to share with others, which did not possess any kind of authoritative status. This non-authoritarian approach runs counter to current trends in the Orthodox community, which seeks authoritative guidance from halachic luminaries on all policy matters. Nowadays, fundamentalism flourishes because, as Eric Fromm has pointed out, there are many who desperately seek an escape from personal responsibility. Although the Rav's approach does not satisfy the demand for dogmatic pronouncements, in the long run it holds the greatest promise for those seeking to combine a commitment to halacha with a selective acceptance of the ethos of modernity, which emphasizes the preciousness of individual autonomy and freedom. According to the Rav, these modern values are implicit in the biblical and rabbinic doctrine of Kavodah Brios, the dignity due to human beings by virtue of their bearing the Tzelem Elokim. So here he claims that really, right, halacha is limited to the rabbinic power is limited to halacha and not to other issues. And even there, he said that the Rav was open to other opinions. And many people, right, characterize the Rav this way, also in a very extreme way, that he totally rejects the notion of Das Torah. Okay.
Totally.
What? Number 28, the footnote 28, he mentions
that this is not thing that's Rabbi Manning, right? Like, anyways, right? Okay. Now, there are definitely tensions within.
The photo's in the box.
What?
In the box. He talks about the Chaim Ozer speech. I think that is.
Oh, no, you're right. You're right. So he notes that it exists, but it's, you know, whatever, not formal, whatever it is. But, and people definitely present him even more, right, even more extremely. So there are tensions in the Rav's position. People take different ways, right? Some people say that really the Rav just contradicted himself, and the turning point for him was the Holocaust, right? And you can read the sources yourself. But one of the things that definitely shifted the emphasis of the Rav's view was the Holocaust, because right, he felt that he used to belong to the Aguda, and after the Holocaust he left and joined Mizrahi. And if you look, for example, at Source 18, you'll see why. Right, he saw that they really made a mistake. He thought that they made a mistake in not supporting the state of Israel and continuing not to support the state of Israel. And so some people say that the Rav was really disillusioned with the notion of Das Torah, and really he transformed, that at some point in his life he really believed in Das Torah to an extent, and then he really moved away from it. But really, right, other people think that he never really changed his view, and if you read carefully, does it sound like he changed, like, what view does the Rav really take? It takes something like, probably like Reb Lichtenstein's view, which is, Yeah, it's not binding in the formal sense of the word, but definitely the ideal leadership is one who can integrate understanding of the world with Torah. He really opposed, you know, the Aguda because he felt they refused to look at reality. Right? He didn't want to divorce us Torah from the world. And yes, it's true that he encouraged autonomy, and we already saw a range, right? Even if you think that there's value to listening to Gedolim outside of halachic context, there's still a range. Do you take it blindly? Do you take it right into consideration? They help you. Guy the Rav was definitely into autonomy more than many other people, but right, it's hard to imagine he didn't have a view somewhat like Erlichenstein, where he thought that it was worth thinking about and turning towards people who understood Torah. Let's just finish.
Even within Rav, the Rav's view, or Rav Arnold's view, it still like has a huge range of how much you look at this.
For sure. There's still a huge range. Okay. Let's just finish with Rabbi Karmi's characters in, because he's always wonderful. Where he deals with this, so to speak, contradiction, right? In his article, Rabbinic Leadership in Two Discussions by Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik. So this is source 21. There's enough public oral evidence that the Rav did not favor direct rabbinic intervention in political affairs, especially where they lack the requisite expertise to speak with authority. His 1967 ruling that decisions about possible territorial compromise in the land of Israel for the sake of peace should be made by experts in the field rather than by rabbis is currently the most discussed example of his outlook. While I am reluctant to rely on private comments, I am sure that many who enjoy the Rav's company can confirm my recollections of sarcasm on the subject of rabbis whose adherents encouraged them to pontificate on matters of which they were inadequately informed. If his outlook can be inferred from his practice, it is appropriate for Gedolei Torah who comment on public matters to recognize the complexity of human affairs and the existence of different informed opinions. Did I skip?
No, you're good.
On most contested questions, and to modulate their voices accordingly. As noted earlier, such leadership inculcates the right frame of reference for individual and communal decisions rather than imposing such decisions from above. The model of teaching authority is alive and well in certain segments of our community, though not as much as one might wish, where laity and middle-level rabbinic scholars respectfully solicit and listen to multiple perspectives among their teachers, who in turn treat their audience and opponents with respect. The Rav's practical orientation towards the idea of Das Torah has been presented by some of his most faithful Talmidim. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, for example, has written about the importance of such guidance, and Rav Wurzberger, in arguing that religious ethics, Christ's personal examples, model individuals who embody Torah and are worthy of emulation, especially in areas where right conduct cannot be formulated in precise halakhic categories, has observed the relationship with the insight of the special status of Gedolim. Though we believe following the Mishnah that wisdom is the ability to learn from all human beings, how can we not grant pride of place to those who have seen Torah steadily and seen in whole, to adapt Matthew Arnold's line, the alternative is virtually unthinkable. Right, so he makes the claim that really that is the Rav's position, where not that he thought that they were binding, but like he thought you at least have to take into consideration, yes, the experts have to make the decision, or the Gadol who understands reality should weigh in, right? It's not divorced from reality. He actually thought in general, right, you should go towards right, actually letting experts decide it, but he didn't think you should divorce Torah knowledge from deciding the world. So we have to go to Mincha, but again, to quickly summarize, you have the range right from the it's absolutely chayav in all matters, midin lo tasur, because they're infallible, to they're fallible, but it's the best we have, to you should take their views into consideration, to the people who know Torah have something to say, it may not be binding, but you should take it, you know, and a whole range in between. Do they have to understand reality? Do they not? Can they offer guidelines for experts to decide? Right, these are the whole range of opinions. Right, this is just to give you an idea of what's out there. And I think this, right, again, adds to our discussion of the relative role of autonomy and authority in the halakhic process. We'll move to something else next week.